Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Mm-mm. He didn't come back on time. Ready to go get his ass out of bed. And I'm not going to say what's in his bed and where he was and blah, blah, blah.
There's a knock on the door. It's Michael Jordan. And I hid. I didn't want him to see me like that. So I'm just like hiding behind the couch with covers over me. Come on. We got to get to practice.
Of course, that's how we're starting to jump. Welcome in. I am Rachel Nichols alongside the 2008 Finals MVP, Paul Pierce, the Hall of Famer, Mr. Tracy McGrady. And I know neither of you have a story like that coming up. I'm going to go one-on-one with two-time champ Bill Laimbeer from the Bad Boy Pistons. He's going to share his perspective of how their heated rivalry with the Bulls went down. And he's going to reveal something you have never heard about that time they walked off the court before the buzzer in 91. But first, we have got to break down last night's episode of The Last Dance, guys. One of the big themes was how in the Doug Collins years, the Bulls' philosophy was, hey, MJ is the best player on the planet. You give him the ball and let him cook. But while it got Jordan the MVP, that strategy did not ultimately work in the playoffs. It wasn't until Phil Jackson and Tex Winter came along and said, we need to integrate more guys through the triangle, that the Bulls actually won. You see it in the 91 finals. John Paxson was the one who made those crucial shots down the stretch because the Lakers' defense kept collapsing around Jordan. So you guys are both guys, players, who at different points in your career tried to carry the entire load as a high-scoring superstar, but at the time, neither of you had other options. Jordan did, though. Tracy, do you think MJ ever could have won if he hadn't embraced a change that even he admitted in that doc he didn't want to embrace at first?
Embrace the triangle offense? Absolutely, I think he would have won championships. You got to look back. Doug Collins had taken his team to the Eastern Conference Finals to face a Bad Boys Pistons team that just won a championship. So you look at Scottie Pippen in his second year was still emerging to find himself and who he was as a basketball player. I mean, we're talking about his second year. Like, I go back my second year. Paul, you go back your second year. I mean, we still haven't matured as basketball players. Our game hasn't really reached to where we once got it to in our career. So to say that the triangle unlocked Pippen's game, I don't believe that at all. I just think whatever system they were in, whether it was Doug Collins' system, the triangle, Michael Jordan was going to win championships regardless. He's too cerebral of a basketball player to try to beat a tough Detroit Pistons team by itself when he don't have any help. He knows if these guys are going to collapse in on me, I'm going to find other guys. I'm not going to try to take every shot. I mean, and that's just with growth. So I'm under the impression, even under Doug Collins, if he still was a coach, he would have won championships.
Yeah, you know what great coaches do? They find a way to get, they find out an offense to get the best out of your best players and the rest of that complements the other players. And so, implementing the triangle offense, they felt like Jordan could still be at his best, but it would help the other guys around him. And so would Jordan had have been great without the triangle? Absolutely, because in every era, when you look at it, the best player always won a championship. You can go to any era. 99% of the time, the best player of that era always won. He was already an MVP before he won. He was already considered the best player before he won. So, you know, it's just coaches figuring out what's the right system to put around my best player that's going to help out the other guys to help him win. But he was always going to be successful no matter what offense you designed around him.
But it works in complement, guys, right? You're the same two players who have told me time and time again the last couple seasons that the Rockets can't win if everyone knows that James Harden is going to dribble, dribble, shoot, right? So you need other guys in the mix. And I know Paul in Boston, of course, getting Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett is part of what helped propel you to a title. But even before that, wasn't Doc trying to get you to kind of change how you looked at the end of games?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody knew the ball was going to be in my hand. So it was up to me to try to trust my other teammates. But with me finding that out, it opened me up even more, because when teams was like, he will make the pass, you know, that opened me up for one-on-one situations. But it was hard at first, I must admit, because I played on losing teams and, you know, we didn't have the best players surrounded around me. And it came to a point where it was like, Doc was like, you have to trust your teammates. And if you're double team at the end of the game, but sometimes at the end of the game, that guy is open for a reason. You got a guy who's standing behind the 3-point line who shoots 20% from three. I'm going to take my chances with a fadeaway 3-pointer over two defenders than passing it to an open guy who probably shoots 10 to 15% from 3-point land. And so, but it took a while for me to just like, you know, all right, maybe you're right. But once we got better players, that's an easy choice, Rach. That's an easy choice.
Yeah, Tracy, I mean, that reminds just, I mean, me of you in Orlando. You didn't have the other guy to pass to.
Nah, I didn't have the other guy. My other guy was Grant Hill, who was, dealing with ankle surgery. So that left the burden on my shoulders to go out and produce on the defensive end, the offensive end. In the games, like, I had to do it all, and it took a toll on me. It's tough. I don't care how great you are as a player. If you don't have that other guy who's an all-NBA caliber type guy, an all-star, you're not going to win. And MJ found that out until Pippen emerged to becoming an all-star.
Absolutely. All right. Well, guys, I want to shift our attention to the other big storyline from last night's episode of The Last Dance. Of course, Dennis Rodman's impromptu mid-season hiatus. This is amazing. Pippen coming off surgery. Rodman had to play it straight for such a long time. But when Pip finally came back, Rodman got the approval from Phil Jackson to go on a bender in Las Vegas for what was supposed to be 48 hours. Ended up being a little longer than that. Paul, I cannot imagine another player in the history of basketball getting that kind of hall pass from MJ and Phil. So do you think that the Bulls changed Dennis Rodman, or did Dennis Rodman in some way change the Bulls there?
I absolutely believe that Dennis Rodman changed the Bulls. You know, in a system where you have great leadership, great coach, people who are very demanding of your practice habits, of your nightlife, you know, you have to give way to what Dennis Rodman brought to the court. Dennis was always going to be Dennis. And as long as he gave you 110% on the court, you can live with some of his off the court antics. And I just thought, you know, you had to soften up for a guy who was different, a guy who wanted to be accepted, a guy who already won a championship, a guy who knew what it took. And so at that point, Dennis was established. He was great. He was an all-star. Everybody knew how Dennis was off the court. And if he needed a break, you kind of backed off. And that's great coaching, and that's great leadership by the Bulls, because they knew their players. They was like, you know, we don't want a guy being all frustrated or going through some things throughout the season that's going to affect his play. Maybe he does need a 3-4 day, 5 day, whatever. Let's give him that. And you know what I kind of look at that as in today's game? I look at that as, what do we call it? We call it
load management.
Exactly. That was just Dennis's form of load management. That's all it was back then.
No, you got to give respect to Phil Jackson. Talking about knowing your players, knowing the temperature of your players, and, you know, knowing how to bring the best out of your players. Go ahead, man. Take a couple of days off. Because they know when he's on that floor in between those lines, like, he's giving 110%. But I don't think the Bulls changed Dennis Rodman. I think Madonna changed Dennis Rodman. He was, we're talking about the queen of pop in the 80s, who was controversial and didn't care what anybody thought or how she lived her life. Like, she was going to be herself at any time. And she, you know, really convinced Dennis Rodman to be who he is as a person. Like, Dennis in Detroit, we hear he didn't drink. He didn't do none of that crazy stuff. He didn't dye his hair, no tattoos and all that. He didn't have that in Detroit. When he got to San Antonio, he met Madonna. Everything just went wild with him. Their hair coloring, just the polarizing, just, he was a polarizing figure. And then when he got with the Bulls, it just magnified it. And I have to think that, you know, Madonna changed him as a person.
Well, it's a great point, Mac, because look, Madonna, for all of her outlandish behavior, has known as a super hard worker. And that's what Dennis was, right? The story in the documentary about how he went on this crazy bender, Michael Jordan has to track down to his Chicago place, knock on the door, and pry him away from Carmen Electra. And then they go to practice, and Dennis is literally running circles around the rest of those guys. Yeah. Because when it came time to go to work, Dennis still went to work. It's an amazing story.
Absolutely.
I may just go rewatch the entire documentary after this show, but there are more episodes coming, and we'll have a little sneak peek for you later in this show. Before we go to break, I did want to give some important news on the current Chicago Bulls. Our Adrian Wojnarowski reporting that they are hiring former Sixers senior VP of player personnel, Mark Eversley, as general manager. Eversley is from Canada. He's going to be the first black GM in Bulls history, and he will, of course, work closely with their new executive vice president there in Chicago, Arturis Karnishevas. So management change complete for the Chicago Bulls. All right, coming
Shout
up, two-time champion Bill Laimbeer, the Bad Boy Pistons. He joins me to dig into the rivalry between Chicago and Detroit and discuss how the Jordan rules came to fruition. This is a good one. Stay tuned.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you, like your mom when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Welcome to The Jump, the great Bill Laimbeer. Thank you so much for joining us. Two-time NBA champ, four-time All-Star, and of course, one of the icons of his era. And last night, viewers got a glimpse, but Bill, can you explain the Bad Boys to the youngsters out there? What feeling did you guys try to carry out on the court?
Win championships. That's all that really mattered to us. Our style of play was, you know, everybody called it ugly, and they called it ruining the game. But reality says that the game, we change the game.
There's a quote in The Last Dance from Michael Jordan where he says, quote, "I hated them." And he said, "The hate carries to this day." Does it surprise you that he still feels that way?
No, you know, we hated the Boston Celtics. You know, mentally strong teams, you have to get past them. And getting past them is the hardest thing you could possibly do. It just takes so much energy and so much, you know, and disappointment over the years. So I understand how he feels. We didn't hate the Bulls. They were trying to catch us. We were the winners. But we hate the Boston Celtics. No question about that.
There's a section of the documentary that talks about the Jordan rules. James Worthy actually chimes in. He said, watching that, I don't know how MJ came out of that alive. There's another quote. As soon as he steps in the paint, hit him. Get him on the ground. How bad do you want him? Are you willing to be hit to score a basket? Was that really what it was like with you guys?
Yeah, it was twofold. One, you couldn't let him dominate the game because, you know, he could at times. So make him shoot jump shots. If you don't want to shoot jump shots, you want to come in to paint, well, you pay the price. That was a given. And he tried, and, you know, he made some buckets, but he also hit the floor a lot. But he also, you know, his teammates weren't capable at that time to carry the day. So we knew that he had to pass the basketball to them. We'd take our chances with them being the scorers. So it's kind of twofold. One is wear him down as much as we could in a physical aspect, but also try to force the action onto his teammates.
And Bill, you and the Pistons are the only players to have an overall winning playoff record against Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, and Michael Jordan, which is an amazing trifecta. But we know in 1991, the Bulls finally got over the mountain. They beat you. And the documentary details how you in particular were the one who told your teammates at the end of that series, "We're not shaking their hands. We're just leaving." What do you remember from that?
Well, just that. You know, they whined and cried for a year and a half about how bad we were for the game. But more importantly, they said we're bad people. We weren't bad people. We were just basketball players winning. And that kind of stuck with me because they didn't know who we were or what we were about as individuals in our family life. So all that whining they did, why shake their hand? They were just whiners. They won the series. Give them credit. We got old. They got past us, but okay, move on.
Do you regret now not shaking their hand? Do you stand by that?
No. Why would I regret now today? I don't care what the media says about them. I never did. If I did, I'd be a basket case, especially back then. I was about winning basketball games and winning championships and did whatever I had to do to get the most out of my ability and our team. And we did. At the end of the day, we're called world champions.
You're still the Detroit Pistons' all-time leading rebounder, in addition to still being, as you say, you're still two-time world champion. But you were also a center who was a serious threat from the outside. 30 years before anyone started using the term unicorn, you made more than 200 three-pointers in your career. What has it been like for you, I've always wondered, to see the NBA game change so much, and decades later, such a premium put on the skill set that you had all those years ago?
Well, you know, the game, everybody says the game has changed and it's no fun. I don't know if I buy that one. The players are bigger, faster, stronger than ever before. And so the court basically shrunk, to use, you know, and from word, there's no room to move. So you have to be able to shoot deeper and from the perimeters in all positions because you have to be able to open that lane up for any kind of drives.
You, of course, also have had a tremendous second act as a head coach in the WNBA. You won three titles with the Detroit Shock. You're currently coaching the Las Vegas Aces. And we know the WNBA season, just like everything else, is on hold right now. Yeah. If you had to make a call right now in your gut, do you think the WNBA plays this year?
Yeah, clear as mud. I think, you know, the men, the NBA, is going to lead this. Not only for the basketball world, but I think for all sports. You know, they're working very hard trying to find solutions. They have a lot more zeros than we do in the WNBA. So we're going to take our cue from them. If they're able to come back and put on a show here this summertime, I think we'll follow along with just what they're doing.
Well, Bill, before I let you go, we have to talk about your somewhat secret past. If there are any 80s kids TV show fans out there, they need to know that you were on the show Land of the Lost. You were a sleestack.
I was a sleestack.
I just need to know what you're more proud of, your NBA career or your childhood acting career, because I know some people who might think that being a sleestack was cooler than being a bad boy.
Well, cooler is one thing, but I know when I was, you're 17 years old and you're in Hollywood like I was, and you're on a TV show. The greatest thing was it pays so much money. It's embarrassing. We hardly worked and we got all kinds of money. And I still get money today from residuals for stuff like that. It's stupid, but it was fun. It's a part of my past that, you know, I try to keep a little bit hidden, but at the same time, I'm kind of proud of it.
I love it.
It was a cult.
It still is. There's no question. Bill, thank you so much for joining us. It's been really fun to relive the Bad Boys days over these past few days on ESPN. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
On Wednesday, be sure to tune in as we continue to revisit some of the most significant games in NBA Finals history. A couple of dynasty busters here. 7 Eastern, it's Pistons-Lakers in 2004. That led to the breakup of Shaq and Kobe, followed by Spurs-Heat in 2014. Of course, that was LeBron's last game as a member of the Miami Heat. And after the jump, stay tuned for the NFL Draft Grade SportsCenter special. SportsCenter at 5:30 Eastern, and SVP comes at 11. All right, let's get to some news, guys. Woj reporting that beginning on May 1st, the NBA is reopening team facilities in states where stay-at-home restrictions are being loosened. Still no group workouts or organized team activities, but here are a few of the notable states with NBA franchises that appear to be a part of this. So Georgia, Colorado, Texas, Florida. These states have all either already or are about to loosen restrictions. Mac, these are single-player workouts, but at least now players would have access to a hoop, which a lot of guys haven't had, weight room facilities, team personnel to guide them. I don't know. I guess I assume they're going to disinfect between each player, but would you feel comfortable going into the Rockets facility if you were still playing there? Because in Texas, this is going to be a thing.
Absolutely. I mean, we're not talking about a crowded facility. It's really not too many people in these facilities. So I will feel comfortable as long as I don't have to run into a lot of people and shake hands and give pound and talk about what I've been up to for the last 2 months. You know, I'll be fine.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, as long as you keep it controlled, 3-4 people. I mean, because most of us right now are probably surrounded by family members, which 3 or 4 people are in quarantine. As long as it's not a huge group, I'm very fine with that.
Yep. Hey, the T-Mac Arena is open if you want to get some shots up.
We've all seen the gym, T-Mac. I think it might be nicer, in fact, than the Rockets facility. Well, guys, I want to talk about the Lakers, too. They are one of the NBA's most profitable franchises. But Kevin Arnovitz has a new piece out today reporting that they applied for and received $4.6 million from the federal government as part of a program meant to bail out small businesses during the COVID pandemic. Now, after the program ran out of money in less than 2 weeks and there was a public backlash against a lot of those payouts going to big businesses, the Lakers elected to return the $4.6 million. So, Paul, bad luck that they applied for a small business loan in the first place, or good luck that they returned the money?
Well, it's a good look they returned the money, but, you know, the Lakers have always been committed to, you know, taking care of their employees and taking care of the community. So, you know, I give a shout out to the Lakers for making the payout. You know, they paid it right back. Even though it could have came out of their pocket, they paid it back.
Paul, they're one of the most valued franchises in sports. How do they even qualify for that? Perfect example. Do you and I qualify for the stimulus package?
$1,200?
No.
You do not. I'm going to answer that for you. Neither one of you qualify for that.
Exactly. So that's just like us, you know, getting that $1,200. Do we need that? No. Other people out there need that. And small businesses need that 4.6 or whatever the millions that they got.
Look, it's one of those things that they did actually qualify for the package, which is what part of the backlash was, right? That the way the legislation was written meant that the bigger businesses qualified, but the public said, no, they should not. And there was so much public pressure against a lot of businesses. The Lakers were one of the teams or one of the businesses that gave that money back to the federal government. All right, guys, before we go, I want to give a little teaser about what we've got tomorrow on The Jump. Guys, there's some spiciness in episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance. We're going to get to see it. We're going to talk all about it. It's about who is leaking info to the media. Some fingers pointing at Horace Grant, who is in the dock denying it. It's going to be amazing. So we'll see that tomorrow, and we'll see all of you on The Jump.